My favourite story, by the way, about the French subs, I don't know if it's true or not, but you know the way, obviously, when you're putting in copy and you want to put whatever day it is rather than today, you put, you know, brackets Thursday or whatever. A French sub was doing a football report and they changed Sheffield Wednesday to Sheffield Tuesday. Anyway, Kevin.
And so on, and I watched nearly most of those witnesses giving the evidence and suffered giving it myself. I'm picking up the hints. I get the feeling that he's very aware of the need to ensure that the press remains as free as possible. So I'm imagining that he will probably come up with some form either of completely independent self-regulation, or an independent self-regulation which relies perhaps on a statutory backstop, as it were, to ensure that everyone complies. But even that would still be an immense step backwards. I can't tell you what American journalists say about this. They just simply think the laws of Britain are not good enough to have dealt with bad journalism, and that's why we have to regulate. Although I think American journalists fail to understand that, firstly, that competitive nature of our press, which they don't have, and secondly, that within every American newspaper, there is already somebody in charge of the ethics of that newspaper who come down very heavily when they make mistakes. The difference in Britain is there are no ethical police persons, in any newspaper except The Guardian, where we are subject to consistent pressure from within. And I think to create a culture within newspapers to police themselves would be the answer, but I'm fantastically hopeful. Can I just say about Tony Blair, by the way? When Richard Desmond, the pornographer, bought Express and Daily Star, the first person, he told me this himself, the first person to call him was Tony Blair. Come round and have a cup of tea in number 10. And only months later did we know that Richard Desmond gave the Labour Party £100,000.
Right.
That just says everything, I think.
James, I'll tell you what we'll do, James. So if anyone else has a question, that we'll take them all, and Roy, you can sum up and answer all the questions at the same time, like a good politician, and we'll have a question here. We'll take James, then Danny, and then we'll go around the room. James.
The question I would ask simply, is not the failure in Britain recently, the failure of the police, ultimately, and the DPP to prosecute at an early stage and to investigate? If the criminal law, which does provide sufficient remedies for all the wrongs of the press, invasion of privacy, trespass, all of those things can be dealt with, if that had been properly executed, then the press would have been protected as a majority of today.
There's a man from a legal background. Danny?
Just to return to the parochial from West Belfast. 2 years ago, in October 2010, I was just on my computer, and every Word document had been emptied, taken away. And I went to a guy called Stephen Sanson, who's my computer expert, and I said, listen, I've been working on a play, 7 weeks' work has been wiped out. He went in the computer, he couldn't find it. Now, whoever entered my computer was letting me know that they entered my computer. So that was it. I got the computer fixed up and went back to work again. And then on the 11th of July last year, I got a phone call from the Sunday Times asking me that they met a call the police and in contact with me. And I says, why? He says, oh no, just reported your phone is your mobile phone was hacked. And I was thinking about my computer, but this guy said your mobile phone. And I went to my solicitor contacted the Metropolitan Police. But unfortunately, being old, I couldn't remember the number because I changed the phones from my days. What number I was using 3 years ago, whenever they said that they thought my phone had been hacked. So my question is this here, is there a Northern Irish dimension to this, a political dimension to this? But so far, I haven't seen any cover of the last in the party, yet being a conspiratorialist, I strongly suspect that there is.
Go ahead. E2. Okay. And your sister beside you.
Mine is just a comment, not a question.
Okay.
First of all, thank you very, very much. I wasn't meant to come to this lecture at all, but my daughter insisted I came. And of course, it was very, very interesting. And of course, we would always read newspapers. We reach all the journalists are safe. I'd like to say that. No matter what about the other meeting. Now, the other thing I want to say is thank you for the $1 million for being so carefully right through the course that I've included in prisons. And my final addition is that I have been bumped. I'm a political identity, I'm not important, but I'm Belfast by marriage only. And when I came to live in West Belfast, same place, at the end of the 70s, a member of the army came to my door and said, how to do a good evening, all that kind of thing. So I said, yeah, that's thank you. And could he have my phone number? Now, we've had some unpleasant experiences, so we certainly don't have our own progress record. And I said, thank you very much for your concern, but actually we're at Selectric. And he said, where is your personal safety? I said, appreciate it, but really no. But it's possible that you'll get it. Anyway, it's really hard, quite an eagle. And sometime shortly after that, I had a call from County Kerry. And the carrier said, listen, I'm quite surprised. It's just that we should have been for a country, what's going on? And I said, well, it's probably fairly deep, everything's up in heap. And then I had phone calls from Tom. Before we could do it, it was a and I finished all these because I knew you were nuts. I said, I wonder if everything's happening here. So this went on, and eventually it stopped at people just forward. But even now, and as I'm a little identity, I'm an electric mechanically, and that's a very small statement. I still get the click on the line. Somebody phones me from London. And I hear the click, and he says, do you hear this click?
Yes.
And we go on for seven, and the time talking, and then click off, because we only talk to Nancy sometimes.
My goodness.
Because I think privacy is dead.
There you are, Roy. Pick the bones out of all of that.
Okay. Thank
you.
Let's start with... good Kerry accent, too. James, the failure to prosecute. I do believe that. I do believe that what actually happened was, over a period of time, I spoke earlier on about the way in which journalists got up to dirty tricks, or a sliding scale of dirty tricks, or dodgy practices, dark arts, as they're sometimes called. But in fact, a lot of the reason they got away with those is because the police did hang back from touching journalists, to be honest. The situation may well have changed now. A good illustration of this was the failure of the Director of Public Prosecutions ever to worry about contempt of court. Until this particular Attorney General, Dominic Grieve, and my hat is off to him, there have been very little attempt to curb material published about people who were arrested before they came to trial. Now, he's going for it in a big way right now, and unfortunately, at least in one case, I think I regard him as having done the wrong thing. But if newspapers had been aware of contempt of court, Christopher Jeffries, the man I mentioned earlier, who was traduced as being an eccentric weirdo because he had funny hair and wrote poetry, all of which can be made to look in the newspaper like you're going to be a child killer because you write poetry. All of that would not have happened if the papers had not slid gradually into the American system of publishing whatever they liked when people were arrested. Now there appears to be an attempt at it. But that ethos has also spread elsewhere in the police. In terms of the law on hacking, for instance, the police, if you think newspapers feel there's a great drama over this, if the police had prosecuted all of the News of the World journalists at the time who were identified in Glenn Mulcair's documents, Glenn Mulcair had documents in which there were just simply lists of telephone numbers, lists of PIN codes, and lists of the name of the people who told him to hack. So imagine, Sienna Miller, 07 whatever, PIN code 1350, Neville Thirlbeck. They had all that information. They still had the information. If they had prosecuted on the basis of that, made the law work at that moment, then none of this drama that's faced all the other newspapers would have happened. Now, it is fair to say, by the way, no one's asked this question, everyone usually does, is the News of the World the only paper guilty of hacking? Mm-hmm. I doubt it. But the truth is, the Mulcair has documentary evidence only about the News of the World. My suspicion is, since there's a flow of reporters from one newspaper to another, that you don't hack when you're on the News of the World, move over to the Sunday Mirror and think, oh, I mustn't hack here. Bollocks. You do. I mean, that for me is an example of the way in which I think hacking was more widespread but unprovable. There have been arrests of people who are not News of the World people, but that's about payment to public officials, not about hacking. So in other words, yes, a failure of the police, I think, to deal with journalists as they should have done in the past, a failure of the Crown Prosecution to do it, and also, and this is muckier stuff, sometimes the involvement of the Crown Prosecution Service in league with the News of the World, and the police in league with the News of the World. The famous instance is the story of the international terror gang who were planning to kidnap Victoria Beckham, a Mazaman Moon story in the News of the World some years ago, in which the News of the World were able to run front page pictures of the police arresting the international terror gang because the News of the World told the police this was going to happen, told them where they were going to be. The police then were in league and arrested them. Of course, the reason the prosecution collapsed was because the main witness turned out to be somebody who'd taken £10,000 in advance from the News of the World and was also a convicted liar and drug dealer, apart from that clever case. All of those people spent months and months in jail, 7 months. Some of them were guilty of other things, some of them were guilty of theft, but none of them were guilty of ever attempting to kidnap Victoria Beckham. A story totally constructed in the News of the World, and then they looked for a gang in order to carry it out, in order to suggest it to them and so on, using an agent provocateur. I haven't even mentioned that, the use of agent provocateur. So in other words, The short answer to your question is, I think the police have failed to be active enough in terms of journalism. Danny's story. Well, I don't know is the answer, but I mean, gosh, you've suffered enough in Northern Ireland from all sorts of official intrusion into your lives to imagine that one doesn't even have to construct a conspiracy theory to imagine that the police and the authorities have been active in all sorts of ways. It must have been a very good play, Danny. The young lady asked about last resort. Okay, I would hack, I would engage in subterfuge, I would covertly tape, and I would covertly record if I felt that the story was justified and that the public interest demanded it. I wouldn't hack to obtain a story about whether Prince William was going to play football that weekend, which is what this story is, that's how the silly story started. I wouldn't hack Sienna Miller to know whether she was having an affair. But if I discovered that Tony Blair was seeing rather a lot of a Saudi Arabian arms dealer, and that I suspected he was selling arms, then I would feel that if I couldn't break this story any other way, I would hack. In other words, I'm saying that there are occasions when I believe journalists should break the law or could break the law, but then they must take the law, they must accept that the law will arrest them. Your point. They should go to the court, be convicted, and then throw themselves on the mercy of the jury. There's a very famous instance of this happening. Clive Ponting, the man who leaked the stories from inside the civil service, who was convicted, but the jury said, don't jail him, and he didn't get jailed. So I think that journalists ought to take the same view. As a last resort, what's the first thing? Is the method proportionate to the story I'm aiming to get? In other words, I can't break this really important story except by blagging. I can't break it except by doing that. I think you can justify that. David Lee, the Guardian journalist, has admitted to hacking in such circumstances in order to break a proper story. So I think, first resort, can I get this story any other way? No. Is the story good? Is there a genuine public interest? Is there an overriding public interest? Is this story so important? Then we go to the last resort. But what would happen in the News of the World is that they were hacking habitually, whatever the story was. Oh, look, there's a murdered girl over there. We need to know what's going on. Let's hack the parents' phones. There are these people who were injured in Afghanistan. We'd like to know more about that story, but they're not talking to us because the army are preventing us, or they don't want to talk. Let's hack into the parents' phones and see whether they make a call that's of interest. That's not proportionate. In fact, it's snide and nasty and whatever. I'll stand on what I've said there. Yeah.
Final question from me, being self-indulgent. I think there's one thing.
Yes, you're a brilliant.
Yes. I think we all share a great love of newspapers in this room, and a lot of us started out there, and we still love a newspaper every day, and we despair when we see the next generation coming through that are on their iPads. Mystic Meg, we started with Mystic Meg, let's end with Mystic Meg. If we invite you back, Roy, in 10 years' time, we go to the local newsagents down the road here on the Falls Road, what newspapers will we be able to choose from?
Okay, well, in 10 years there won't be many newspapers. There will be newspapers because I think that there will be niche publications which people value. It's still a matter of how we fund them. But it's quite clear that there is a terrific movement, especially among young people, to consume everything by screen and not by print. And look at the sales, look at the profitability, and the trend is remorselessly downward. I was on RTE yesterday talking about this very subject in relation to Irish regional newspapers. Irish regional newspapers are hugely valued. They're hugely trusted. But in spite of that, if you look down, the Donegal Democrat, the Western People in Mayo, the Connaught Tribune, great papers that Anglo sell. Look at them all, and they're 7% down on a year ago, and they were 7% down a year ago on the previous year. And they can't sustain themselves on that basis. It's true that they're building online entities in order to attract people, but it's still worrying that the newspaper itself won't be there. And the trouble with online entities, as good as they are, is that they don't generate enough income to pay the wages, absurd wages that, you know, that have been paid to journalists in the past, sometimes wrongly. But even reasonable wages, they're not generating enough. So how we fund journalism and so on is a major problem. But I'll come back in 10 years.
Will you?
God willing. And we'll do that little jaunt.
Thank you, Roy. Appreciate it.